The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Hello and good night, and welcome to The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright. Thank you for joining us this Tuesday evening on Guardian Radio 96.9 for all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. We have a really interesting topic for you guys tonight. We're going a little bit more wide. We're going to do a tech kind of topic tonight, and I have a really interesting guest that you may have heard of on the radio before. But before we get to that, of course, you know, tonight we are brought to you by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical health care needs. We are a family medicine clinic, so we serve everyone in the community, and we also have concierge services so we can come to you. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram, Medical Concierge Services, or on Instagram, medical_concierge_services. You can also check out our website, www.mcsfamilymedicine.com, and check out some of our other services. Give us a call, 326-1521, and our WhatsApp line, especially if you want to join up for NHI, is 432-4010. So we've heard a lot about this topic in the past, but a lot of people may not really understand what this is all about. So we're going to talk a little bit about ChatGPT, artificial intelligence, and what that really means to the Bahamas. Because we hear about these concepts, it takes a long time before they really touch bases in our country, but these are things that are occurring, and we are in a global landscape. So tonight with me is Mr. C. Allen Johnson, and he's kind of our local tech expert. He's been involved in the tech industry for quite some time. And he's going to talk to us about what does that mean for us and how do we benefit from it all? Because technology, especially the things that are happening today, they can be both wonderful and scary at the same time. But the world is moving in that direction. So what does that mean for the Bahamas? What does that mean for the average Bahamian? How do we incorporate this into our lives, or how do we not incorporate this into our lives? So I want to welcome to the show, and I don't think he's been here for quite some time, Mr. C. Allen Johnson, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. And I like the way you frame that concerning depends on the knife, you know, what you use it for.
Yeah.
A tool for improvement, or it could be a very dangerous if used improperly. Thank you for having me. And I have been in the technology business for 46 years now, since I was about 14, 15 years old. If you want to use computers, I was around and there was only punch cards and no monitors.
you sound like my mother when she's like, the entire room was the computer, right?
Believe it or not, they used to use a forklift to lift a 5 megabyte hard drive. You needed a forklift to lift it.
Wow.
I got some computer parts here. If I show you some computer parts, you'll be like, that's not a hard drive. And I keep them. I have almost all iteration of hard drives. A 1 megabyte, 500 megabyte hard drive that looks like a book, a giant book on your table. So I've kept various different iterations of technology, but it's been a good run.
Yeah, I was explaining to my 10-year-old just the other day that my generation would have been the first generation to have like an actual like cell phone that was like accessible, right?
Yes,
right. So, you know, and she looked at me in awe, and I'm like, it's not the cell phone that you're thinking about. Like, we had these little blocks and we thought that was the most amazing thing in the world, right? Because only, I don't want to say it, what they say, drug dealers, but only certain people had those big brick phones. Yeah. As I was a little kid, you know, there was those. And then by the time I was able to use a phone or be off in college, you know, you got to have those little phones, and Blackberries were out and those types of things. So that was the beginning of it all, really.
Yes, and each of those are different. And this is where we have to understand, many of us today have seen some tremendous, if you're born before, let's say if you are at least 1970, yeah, from 1970, or let's use the break off as of, for me it's 1963, I'm going to be 60 this year. But if you look at the independence era of 1967, you'd have been of age, but when most of the technology started in 1980, you'd be just reaching your teen years. That is when we consider the first digital revolution to have begun. It was the second technology revolution, and that's for the advent of the desktop computers, with IBM revolutionizing that, releasing their first iteration in August of 1981, for which I happened to be at IBM at that time as part of that particular team. A lot of people take for granted that the internet has been around for a long time, and the internet came about in its formal stage, as you know it, with the advent of TCP/IP in January of 1983. And so many of the people today are what is called digital immigrants. That's what you call us that was born before then. Then from 1981 on, you have the digital natives that began the whole process of being born digital. More so in 1996 is where you have what is called the pure digital that does not know anything else. They don't know VHS tape.
Yeah.
They don't know CDs, DVDs.
Right, I'm the crossover because I'm an 80s child. So like I could still go to my grandmother's house and she has like a VHS set up in the summertime. We would play a Michael Jackson tape over and over and over again. She had the old cassette player and stuff and we were all fascinated.
They don't know what Blockbuster.
Right? So I'm that crossover generation. So by the time...
You're what is called the millennials, which is from 1995. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. Now, this whole concept of AI, what is it exactly, so that our audience can kind of have it understand as we progress in this conversation?
Well, the best thing... Okay, first of all, let me just give you some iteration of AI. We have been using artificial intelligence for a long time. A lot of people have been using Google, and that essentially is called narrow intelligence. And, you know, we've been collecting data, you were able to search through data, you were not basically able to cue the data. Once they give you a result, you wasn't able to question the result. Mm-hmm. Now we begin a new incarnation of artificial intelligence, what they call generative AI or general AI. This is where you could have, from a text-based environment, a kind of back and forth with the conversation. Like we use ChatGPT, and ChatGPT basically is a collection of data sets that has been collected and utilized and trained. So essentially what it does is it's something called a generative pre-training transformer version 3 that we are using, 3.5. And so what it is, you notice it says pre-trained. So what it does, it takes data, it puts it in text format, and now you can ask questions back and forth as if you're talking to somebody, except it's in text format. You can't talk to it yet. There are some people using what is called audio interfaces, like myself and my wife. We talk to the computer, which... in a split second. This is not part of the artificial intelligence yet, but it converts the information, the speech we have into text. And then it also converts the text that is sent by it back and forth. So we can have in a primitive form of text. So we are doing some form of testing for the next incarnation. We talk about GPT, and we're going to come to the center of that. And so GPT chat, or chat GPT, essentially what it does is it's basically a queue system where you, remember I used to ask Google, you ask Google a question and you say, where's the Bahamas? And then Google will tell you its location. You could ask it and say, tell me some things about the Bahamas. It's like you're going, you can continue a conversation and you can question it and back and forth. And so this is what is called generative AI. If you take, for instance, what Bill Gates said, Bill Gates, as today in an interview on the BBC, He said, I made this note. He said, it's on his blog post. He says, this is a fundamental integration of the microprocessor, the personal computer, the internet, and the mobile phone. And I would agree with him that we are actually at an inflection point. An inflection point is where things changes and there's no going back. And so we are at an inflection point in technology where things as we know it from a technological standpoint has changed. And we're moving to what is called singularity. And singularity is when computers will be equal to the computing power of humans. You know, I know a lot of people get afraid of AI, but AI...
My whole thought is it's not possible because computers have to be programmed. And it's programmed based on the data that it receives or it has. Because even with the chat GPT, it's a gathering of different data compiled for it to give a more generative, I guess, like what you say, response. So doesn't that depend a lot on the data that it really has within its grasp?
Yes, and this is where you have a move between different phases reaching what is called superintelligence, when computers itself can ask questions of you. For things that they don't know, they can ask questions of you. And so as you begin to input that information, collectively, the billions of people that uses the internet, and as these databases become merged as one, as you know, right now you have a competitive nature where databases are not, it's going to be moved into a thing of where people are going to begin to protect their databases because of the intrinsic financial value. Like, for instance, you have Elon Musk that immediately upon getting Twitter, he cut off OpenAI, which was using the data. You have people that is now suing OpenAI. What's the name of the people who did the? They do a lot of the video, the graphics. Who now saying that OpenAI may have intruded on their intellectual property by collecting the data? I want us to make a point on this because it's very important. Because as we move into artificial intelligence, if you notice, it's all database, exactly like you say for computers. Just let me state, I want to get back to this statement. The Bahamas is the only place in the world today that can provide constitutional data privacy, constitutional data protection, and constitutional data sovereignty. The only place in the world, if you read our constitution with a digital mind. And so as we begin to develop this called nascent technology, new evolving technology, we have to begin to look for leadership within our country to see things differently with the merger of law, because law is basically the legal aspect that generally protects information and data, as well as from a technological standpoint. So we're going to have to begin to challenge our leadership to begin to look at the world differently. But when you come back to, as we were talking about, for data collection, what happens is as these data begin to merge, because no matter how you do it, data will bleed into other data silos. And so essentially what you have is a data lake. A data lake is where, for instance, in the Bahamas, we should be developing one. Data lake is where you have this raw open pit and you just throw data in. They call it raw data. You throw data in. Then evolving from that is called data warehousing as you begin to organize them into more organized fashion. And so as I'm using ChatGPT or I'm using Bird or Broad, depending on how you pronounce Google, and other things, they begin to bleed each other. And so as they begin to bleed into each other, they're not going to release the data, any new data coming into their feed. They're going to begin to hold it also. And so those databases will grow exponentially also as we begin a new race. You consider this an arms. Remember the arms race we talked about? Mm-hmm. It's a race for data now, data supremacy. And in fact, the United States, people believe this is something new. ChatGPT came about in November of 2022, but this race has been going on for about 10 years. The United States and China has been fighting for digital supremacy for well over a decade in artificial intelligence, in quantum computing, fusion technology, and the likes. And just that we as a country have not been paying attention, but I would say now is the most opportune time for us to shift our focus, because the utilizing, and even though this may be a rudimentary tool today, in a matter of weeks and months, we can employ literally thousands of individuals in the various different aspects of the knowledge economy, the conceptual economy, and the digital economy. There are these various iterations that we talk about. In fact, the Bahamas government has been talking about this concept of the orange economy. ChatGPT has all but disrupted the orange economy or the creative economy as we know it, except for the very aspect that's available to the Bahamas is an intellectual property protection from a privacy protection and as well as sovereignty means.
So two things I want to pull out because I want people to really understand, because you talked a little bit about this, you know, on WhatsApp online, but just so that everyone can understand, the two points I really want to pull out there is, first, just kind of explain what they're using ChatGPT for, what we could be using it for. And then the second point is really expounding upon the Bahamas and that digital security and what does that play out to mean? Because from what I gather, you know, we have the space in our laws, within our constitution, to basically safeguard something that's kind of already been let out to the world in a sense. And when it comes to this securing of data, we have an opportunity to lay out that framework that a lot of other countries cannot do when data security and those things become so much more important in the future when, you know, data is basically becoming a currency.
Yes. Let me just first the basis, and I'm going to come back and tell you what it does and what it doesn't do. Essentially, what happens is data, we used to say data is the currency of the world. Well, we are now, believe it or not, ChatGPT has brought us into an era that we can now say we have reached a knowledge economy. Now, I want to be very careful. A lot of people heard me talk about this before, and I always use the word knowledge-based economy. There's a difference between a knowledge-based economy and an actual knowledge economy. The knowledge economy is the understanding and comprehension of information and the use of it, which people then generally say shows wisdom. And so essentially what we have is we have reached almost an inflection point where there isn't much data we can collect except for those who have not made it onto the internet yet. You know, like Google can tell you more about you than you know about yourself, stuff you forget. You know, as a doctor, you'll know, you could go into, say, Walmart and you pick up a prescription and Google says, excuse me, but there's an interaction between that medication and the one you're taking.
And we're all using a lot of electronic medical records now that are telling us, you know, okay, you chose that, but there's some moderate risk here. Do you want to like pretty much reconsider what you're doing?
Which brings us to answering the question, and that's what ChatGPT does. Now, consider that ChatGPT database basically ends at 2021, and it's being updated now as the chat engine moves from
2.5 to 4.
Right, to 4. But let me first say, we are ChatGPT 14. But what I want people to understand is another underlying platform there, which they call GPT-3, and which is now 4, and alpha testing for 5. And so essentially, we are now, ChatGPT launched in version 3.5. ChatGPT launched under GPT 3.5, which has just been updated to GPT-4. And GPT is the raw programming code it used to be an open source code, but it's still, in a sense, an open source code that programmers like myself and others use to build things. You know, like you could build your own chat. If you want to, a lot of people use ChatGPT. You could actually take the code of it and create your own version of ChatGPT and call it whatever you want. And still, no one will ever know if you program it properly that you're using ChatGPT. And so it's just that you could just wrap a shell around it. If that's not around ChatGPT.
So you're saying I could go on ChatGPT and say.
No, you go to GPT.
GPT and say, create me. Well, yeah, the basis, GPT, and create me a code for a version of GPT that only gives happy answers, something like that. Yes. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. But you can even do it if you want to do something just for medicine. You could, because as a programmer and a coder, you could just simply have this thing that only answers medicine. You could put a code to say anything that doesn't, is a question that doesn't relate to medicine in this respect or to health or something to ignore. It'll simply say, you know, I'm not programmed to answer questions or just call this. So, and this is where the beauty is. And when you talk about, I hear the Minister of Tourism and Investment say that the government was going to begin to use the artificial intelligence for the enhancement and programming of tourism and advancing the tourism product. I'm very, very interested in understanding where their databases are coming from, who is doing the programming, who owns that information. And then the reason I say that is that we have to be very careful about it. From my own personal evaluation, the Bahamas has within its jurisdiction these so-called silos. We haven't put them in the lake yet. The data in the Bahamas is worth a few billion dollars a year in revenue to the government. In fact, it is one of those things where you hear me talk about a sovereign wealth fund where it says put in the tangible and the intangible, the known and the unknown, seen and unseen in the sovereign wealth fund. We haven't done it yet. And so data is one of those different things. In fact, I would challenge to say that data can create literally 10,000 new millionaires. The data in the Bahamas can revolutionize the hospitality and tourism industry, creating a few thousand new millionaires per year. And that's
yeah. And we have so much potential. I was just downtown and looking at all the tourists and all the people walking through. In fact, that actually, you know, I always think about stuff. So I have to talk to you later, C. Allen, because that I just was driving and something popped up in my head. And I said, you know what, I have to talk to C. Allen about this project because I just saw all this potential as I was going down the street. I have wasted potential.
Right. And so what happens is that when you consider the population of 250,000 adults, and literally speaking, we could very easily, let's write it off at 500 new millionaires a month. Self-sustaining millionaires, when you combine this new information age we are entering in, where you combine artificial intelligence and what is happening in fintech and the banking industry, and what is happening around the whole world in regards to this, we could create, we could transform the Bahamas. In fact, I used to express it that the Bahamas itself is like Hong Kong in the early years. We are almost a history-making destination waiting to be awakened. I've talked about this for 20 years. The Bahamas is the most digitally prepared country in the world, but I want people to know that we are less than 5 years away from losing that destination. And digital preparedness, for people who do not confuse, digital preparedness and utilization are not the same thing. You could be prepared for something and never utilize it, something you have not done. And so when we're talking about unemployment, and we're going to talk about going back to your initial question of what ChatGPT does and don't do, we can actually begin to teach with just teaching some basic skills and utilizing data that has been collected from around the world, more so utilizing some data internally within the Bahamas. And we can put 1,000 people to work within 60 to 90 days. I mean, earning tremendous income because they ChatGPT answers questions, whether it be about a recipe. This is just an example. A friend of mine called me last night concerning an apartment building that he has that has been infected with German roaches and other different things. I went to ChatGPT. That's where I went to first before I went to GPT-4, and I asked concerning the various, what is the best formula there is? And then it gave me a bunch of chemical formulas, and I asked it, what is the best mixture of common things that I could find most likely in my house? And it gave me a combination of, and I know some the insecticide people might not like this, I'm not going to do a complete formula here, but it gave me a combination of flour, sugar, peanut butter, and boric acid to create a particular paste and a combination. And we just went back and forth. I created the paste 2 days ago, gave it to him, and he's calling me today. I just gave him the full paste. It was like you just roll it in little pellets and drop it around. And he's calling me now to ask me, please, we need to do this formula because 2 days later, it seemingly that the roaches have disappeared.
And it's really Google on steroids. So when you Google right now, you get a plethora of information, almost impossible to read through. Because it's answering specific questions, it's actually filtering all of that stuff basically for you and giving you a direct answer.
Absolutely. Remember that you say you asked Google and you said, Google, give me this information, and you wish you could just say to Google, narrow the search for me. You could do that with ChatGPT.
Yeah.
And you could bring it down and bring it down, and you could almost have a conversation and asking it questions as if you and I are speaking together in real time. And if that answers is within its database, it will improve it. Now, imagine that the information I got is from the public domain. When you begin to integrate these other databases that's offline right now into this artificial intelligence, you can see the potential of how it transforms the world. At ChatGPT, you could go right now with artificial intelligence, and we love Beyonce. I can go right now and ask it to recompose a song for Beyonce and using some other tools, reproduce the music, like whatever favorite song is, and say, without violating copyright. And it will actually reproduce a version of that song that does not violate her copyright.
It sounds like Beyonce has to worry. We have a couple of comments online and then we'll get back into it. D. and Johnson, how can the Bahamas enter the data race and become competitive when we are so far behind? Well, you kind of touched on that, but we're actually ahead, but we're behind because of activity.
Right. We're ahead in preparedness. We're behind because of unawareness. And 90% of the Bahamians use technology as a consumer. We consume it like candy, like kids in a candy store. We have not turned it around and used its focus as a tool for personal and national development. That's the problem. And so essentially, you are now an adult, you know how to use a knife. I have to show you how to handle the knife to cut at a different angle. Almost like exactly better way of saying it is this. We all cooks in the technology field. I need to move you into the field of chef. For me, for instance, people ask me, how am I different? I'm considered an applied technology expert. Now, you could become an applied technology specialist. There's a lot of variations in that. And people ask, what makes me different with this definition of applied technology expert? Have you ever watched a cooking show where you have the Battle of the Chefs happen? And in the Battle of the Chefs, they come into the room. Nobody knows the ingredients. Nobody knows what's there. And they open the box and says, this is what you'll be cooking with. And they prepare some of the best meal. And no two person prepares the same meal. This is what they call applied technology experts. And essentially, we don't need recipes. We don't need menu. We are so immersed and aware in it, no matter what technology you bring to us, we can find its use. What happens is those are what they call chefs. What we've had is cooks. Everybody needs a recipe. Everybody goes to Google. Everybody tries to copy what somebody else has done. And in such a way that it makes no significant difference. You might as well go and buy the software off the shelf, because we've had a bad version. I've seen some software development in the country where people announce innovation and it's a bad copy of a software you can get off the shelf for $99. And so what I'm saying, ChatGPT now gives us an enhancement tool that you now have a partner in which you want to do, whether it be for marketing. ChatGPT is going to beat the daylights out of marketers or the people inside of the ad tech environment. Because I can go there and ask it to help me develop a particular campaign on a particular subject, how this is this. When you begin to move out into DALL-E and other type of environment that create graphics and videos, you could actually go and have a conversation and have it design a complete audio video for you or a picture that doesn't exist anywhere. You know, give me a conch with a basketball, or a conch, and just tell it and it will design a conch on the beach, whatever it is, that hasn't done anywhere in such realistic type of environment that you think it was an actual picture taken. And so when we begin to use these tools, this is why it's important for you to get in early. There's nothing that AI can enhance. My wife now uses artificial intelligence to teach our six-year-old and our three-year-old. And if you hear her asking questions to the computers and having conversation with the 6-year-old, having conversation with the computers, you'll be like, wow. And so if you look at preparedness, even at 6-year-old, I would say she's probably about at the ninth grade level, as far as the curriculum that we use in the Bahamas. And so it's not a bragging thing. I'm simply saying is we can use it for preparedness. And so this is where you can take ChatGPT now and insert it into an education system And the education system will gauge where your child is. And we could put, say, 30 students in a class, and the computer will test every child to see what level he's supposed to be. Let's say we're in grade 3. And it'll say, this point is in grade 6 level, 5 level, this is grade 2 level. And the computer will work at those behind, to bring those up, those who advance and accelerate them, and those who's on a normal level to try to enhance them. And so this is all doing, and so teachers now becomes an augmented tool to assist these students in studying.
Almost formulating a curriculum for the individual child.
Yes, absolutely, and carry them through. And it knows and gauges exactly how they progress. This is not a new concept. In fact, Jeffrey Lloyd and I used to talk about this in the early 2000s before there was actually Facebook, when Microsoft used to have something called Microsoft Student. And we talked about these potential things in the future where you have this called adapt technology, where we'll be doing this in the future. This was capable since 2004. Now, Khan Academy, who Microsoft surrendered the Microsoft Student program to, is now itself adopting GPT as part of its curriculum program. And so we can begin to look at, we talk, so those individuals that we say missed 2 years of school,
yeah,
how can it help the Bahamas? Well, let's go, forget what we have now. Let's decide where we want to be and what level we want each of our students. And we can ask artificial intelligence right now to design us a curriculum. First it designs a curriculum, then we have it to test and prepare each student to see where it meets themselves on that curriculum guide, and then ask it for the steps that is necessary in real time as they begin to use it, how to move them to the minimum standard we need each of them to be. And for those who can excel, move them even further into the future. This is real time. This is not fantasy I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is something we can do for education now, where we have the civil service that's overburdened. I know people are afraid of the civil service, right? 40,000 people working for the civil service and government and agencies. Based on a survey that was done in right around 2016 or 19, it estimated that we had almost 40,000 people running all these government agencies and associated companies with the government. It said that using technology, we only need 7,500 of them. The problem we had is we didn't have anywhere to put the other 30,000 individuals. Now we are in such an arena, we could actually send them home to do, and as we would call it, do nothing and get paid what the PS get paid. And I know people say that's not, yes, we can. In fact, we begin to talk about this, what the salary we call it? We call it this this livable wages. Livable wages in the Bahamas is achievable in less than 2 years, where we could say the literacy with the minimum wage of salary could be what they're setting up in our TCI right now. We could set it at $10, $400 a week, or even $650 a week as the livable wage called for, because it's possible. Because we can enhance the economy in such a way that individuals are literally self-employed as solo entrepreneurs, as they call it, or as collectives. We could revolutionize our product. If you look for
And I think it's possible because our population is so small. It's
absolutely, that's the point. The point is that we have 70% of young people under the age of 35, if you use the youth definition, that is unemployed. We say they have no skill. What do we mean is they have no skill base as we know it, but they are digitally aware citizens that we just basically need to teach them on. Before we had to teach them certain skills. Now we have ChatGPT can identify what skills they may possess and what could be enhancement and direct them into a multitude of different industries. And when you begin to talk about the hospitality industry, we could improve services like nothing before. At one time, we used to provide sunshine and sea and service. We only present sunshine and sea now.
Okay. Another comment here. Can't program software like this ChatGPT and others be open to manipulation and staring? We must not forget the hurrah over software programs like Facebook, Twitter, etc., political manipulation, ideological staring that has evolved through it. As we look for ways to monetize the technology in the Bahamas, we must continue to be wary of the potential for manipulation and associated security. Before you answer, that's kind of like what I was saying at the beginning.
I'm going to tell you, that's the second question you
program, yes.
That's the second. See, first of all, this is why we have to democratize data. And the Bahamas is one of the few places. The second part of the question that you asked concerning the whole concept of constitutional privacy, constitutional protection, and constitutional sovereignty. privacy is what most of the people around the world is becoming waking up to, that they do not have. And so you have what we have now is the surveillance economy that's been around for quite some time. Then you have what is called protection, where you have data that you do not want anybody to have access to. So privacy is what you put in the public and you just don't want it to be abused, okay? So in the same way you go to the grocery store or any place else, you don't want somebody to inadvertently record you and then use it for whatever purposes they want. Protection is data that you produce yourself that you want to be able to protect, that nobody exploits it except for you. Sovereignty says that you as an entity, your DNA, your biomedical records, everything exists as its own. Now, what's the difference between constitutional and regular? There is data privacy, but the Bahamas can provide constitutional data privacy. There is data protection, but the Bahamas can provide constitutional data protection. There is a concept called data sovereignty, but the Bahamas can provide data sovereignty, such as nations. Here's what happens. The word constitutional is very important, because if you pass a law, the law can be modified. But if the Constitution protects the law, you need to have a referendum to change the law for the protection under. So you have a constitutional protection. And so we have the ability to do that. And believe it or not, here's the catch with the income potential. As you have Estonia right now that gives digital citizenship or residency, imagine where we modify our laws that we sell anybody with technology anywhere, producing data anywhere in the world, let's say $5. There's 5 billion people on the internet or whatever around the world. You just tell them, you give us $5. I know people may be familiar with ASCAP or BMI, where you have music industry, where the radio plays your music or something. They have to give you a penny, 2 pennies, 3 pennies, whatever they use your music for royalties. Well, you have a billion people who decides that they want to monetize their data. They apply for citizenship in the Bahamas, digital citizenship. So they won't be having no babies for y'all, y'all who's afraid, except it's digital babies.
Yeah, but, you know, we're scared of that. But,
so the digital citizenship gives them a right of data protection. Let's say they pay a $5 initiation fee. You've collected $5 billion alone. We don't, and now we talk about how to be, we only pass the law. When you pass this law, you've created an ecosystem, began to create an ecosystem that data companies and data centers will run to the Bahamas to begin to participate in the new economy. Now they are registered as digital citizens. Imagine that C. Allen Johnson now is a digital citizen. And I say, let's say I'm charging him $5 a year. What happens is now that his data can be monetized, whether it's his disease. If you have cancer, you may have the BRCA gene, and somewhere the code that's unique to you in the BRCA gene is utilized in a cure, then you should have a legitimate right to be paid for that disease that you may have died from, but let you can leave for your family to benefit from your debt.
The second part, though, talks about the manipulation, as we saw.
I'm coming to that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So when you come to that manipulation aspect of it, and so I just want people to understand the value. This is a $1 trillion economy that has just been birthed. Okay. And so what happens when you come to data manipulation, this is where data protection allows for, because once they have a hold of this data, they can do whatever they want to it, they can actually use it against you. They can actually begin to utilize it to track your behavior, to influence how you behave and everything. I know people are afraid of artificial intelligence, but artificial intelligence is only as threatening as it is non-democratized. You know, we say for computers, the smaller group of people that control artificial intelligence, the more dangerous it'll become.
Yeah, and I think that's with the fear, as we saw with over the pandemic and how information was controlled, how Twitter, Facebook programmed basically what they wanted to show, what they did not want to show, and was able to create the narrative that they wanted. In a sense, I think people are fearful of, because there is some issues in terms of accuracy and compiling the data, even with the answers, even though this is a better program than the ones previously, it's not 100%.
No, believe it or not, because this, even when this moved from what is called an open source code, and I am for data democratization around the world, and I'm simply saying this, artificial intelligence, the more of us understands its use, can be used as itself a democratization tool. Because what happens is, if you own your data, this way the Bahamas gets to play a role. If you own your data, remember, they control and manipulate the data, and their value came from the exclusivity that they had to the data. And so when you begin to take away this exclusivity, and if you begin to see a threat, we could come together as a hive and, mm-hmm. and actually go against the threat and create an even greater, better database than what they are using. So you create alternatives utilizing the very tool of we have artificial intelligence. But if we as a people, as a world, continue to keep surrendering our data without any recourse, they are actually creating what is called digital twins of who you are, digital twins of your behavior. And so this is why when you go to YouTube or something, you get a lot of people don't realize that they're feeding you.
They're feeding you, yeah.
And so
based on what they think that you want, what you've done in the past, and all that stuff.
So if you have your data as sovereign, guess what? Every time you go for a search, you'll end up with something new. And guess what that does? That actually, that new information that you've accumulated above yourself mm-hmm. increases the value of your data. So they're putting you in a cage. They're making sure you don't leave. They're finding out now that.
So you're basically saying we're moving in this direction. Monetize yourself. Monetize your data. Monetize what makes you individually you.
Yes.
Which I kind of dig that in a sense because we are moving that way, and it seems very hard to control all of this. Like you say, such a small grouping of people right now kind of control the data. And I think what we've seen over the last few years is the power of that control.
Yes, they subdued the world, the technological world. In fact, you could see how they controlled the world that was connected technologically. But let's use COVID as an example. But you're seeing now where a lot of data is now coming out to show that what they claim was not necessarily true. And I read a study today where it shows that those individuals who got the COVID shot after being infected has less protection than natural immunity or those who just got the shot alone.
And the scary thing about that, C. Allen, is that data was coming out when they were giving that shot out in Israel, but only a few people were actually able to.
Right, but this is why with data.
So persons like myself seem like, where is she getting this information from?
Again, so data democracy gets to take that out. But guess what happens? By you having sovereignty over your data, they would not have the ability to suppress your data. So your data will be available to anyone that you want to make it available to, whether through privacy, through your protection, or through your sovereignty. And so they're basically exercising sovereignty over your data for their own purpose. And so there are individuals like myself that believe in transhumanism, which scares a lot of people. I know 52.
I
believe that technology can enhance us as humans. But I don't believe in the total cyborg, transforming mm-hmm. your total brain into it and your brain live forever. Because for those of us that understand the true nature of artificial intelligence, and I hear people watch the movie like 1984 and The Matrix and whatever, I just want people to understand. Let me give you a quick sidebar on The Matrix. The Matrix was more than them using humans as batteries. Artificial intelligence, let me tell you what artificial intelligence, if you give artificial intelligence all the information right now, artificial intelligence can tell you the billions of things and combination of things that you may have missed. It cannot tell you the future.
Right.
The human mind with imagination, and it's a gift that can happen. So remember, artificial intelligence can only crunch the data provided. The human mind creates.
And only do it based on its programming.
Right. So here's what happens. When you saw The Matrix and the humans was there was more than just body. There's a hidden message. They were kept alive for their imagination, how they saw the world and how they behaved. Yeah. So it wasn't just feeding energy, as they said. They said they were fueled. They were fueled because artificial intelligence constantly could not provide new information for themselves.
So they were basically mining humans.
Yes, absolutely. So when you watch a movie called Star Trek called The Borg, First Contact, if you want to watch the movie, they meet a race of technological advancement. But you notice what they did. Whenever they consume all the information of the world, they destroyed that world. And what happened? They became hungry. They went looking for another world. That's another warning, a subtle warning about artificial intelligence is. Once artificial intelligence has computed all the data in the world without no new data, it'll have nothing else to do.
That's why I'm a humanist, because I think that we still reign supreme because we have to program them. They cannot have imagination. They can't technically think for themselves. They think based on programming, which can be scary because we've got some weird people out there programming these things. But that's why I'm more of a humanist. But I understand, aspects of the transhumanist thing. We have another one. Someone's complimenting you, C. Allen. C. Allen is a man living before his time. His knowledge and enthusiasm for the monetizing of potential of technology in the Bahamas goes over a lot of people's heads. What else we have? TikTok has been banned from government software in the UK. I think the US is considering the same. What are the security risks associated with these new AI technologies?
Let me say something for TikTok before you move. Mm-hmm. TikTok is not doing anything that all the other platforms are not doing. The argument is that the
internet
is going to China. So right. I want you to know, when you get rid of your TikTok, you're just saying, I will surrender it all to this guy rather than to this guy.
And he'll sell it to China, right?
So I just want people to believe that the fight is about, again, data supremacy. Who will have data supremacy? The U.S. have it, or will China have it? And that's a question we have to ask ourselves.
Oh, this is a good one, because I thought so too. When I was seeing like the ads and the different people using ChatGPT, maybe because they were using it for such baseline stuff, I thought this very same comment that this person made. ChatGPT will result in the dumbing down of society by promoting plagiarism and cheating. Because I saw a lot of people do. One guy was bragging how he used it to write a letter to his employees about some, and I was just like, a three-letter, like, what is this? What we're using this technology for? And I was like, this is a waste of time.
No, actually, Rich, this is where we talk about the Bahamas teaching the proper use. Because what happens is, if you have information, remember we talked about, people say the Bible says seek ye after wisdom. Information only when properly comprehended is knowledge. Knowledge only when properly executed is wisdom. That's why you will always have a majority of people who will basically become consumers of this technology. So he's doing exactly what he did in Facebook and Google, right? Except that now that he could put together different variations of what he would gotten from Google, he's doing it in there. But as it stands right now, we have anti-AI that can actually grade whether or not something was written by artificial intelligence. It's out in the wild now, beyond the beta testing that we have been using. And it checks concerning the accuracy, the potential of it being written by AI. And what is happening right now with the GPT-4 and others, there is some digital watermarks now that's going to be created that will be able to, another artificial intelligence will be able to tell whether or not it was written, giving credit to what it is. So what that does now, it allows you now, like you say, to see multiple pictures, and your thoughts can now be translated using technology to create something new as opposed to copying. But there's going to be a very narrow tunnel when the opportunity comes.
And I see you're going to have two schools where you have those who are going to go hard on, you know, we can prove that this is whatever, and then you're gonna have that little black market that's like, hey, if you use our stuff, nobody will know.
Oh, right. They already have that.
Right. So you're gonna have two streams of this going all over the place. Someone says, so a 7-year-old could graduate medical school or win an art poetry contest or win a Grammy Award for best song just by knowing how to put prompts in. I think that's what we kind of covered.
They can, but yes, the difference is remove them from the computer. And this is where the value comes in, the ability to say which is that you created, so you'll know whether a human inputted the new information or they simply compile a collection of information. This is what reverse engineering is. So ChatGPT has won an art award, not ChatGPT, but artificial intelligence has won a prestigious art award, as well as written some song awards and other, as won some awards. The new GPT-4 has passed, it was passing the law exams with 10% percentile, is now passing in a 90% percentile. So it's improving, but it doesn't add any value. Your strength, just like for those who made money in the technology era, is to add value. And this is where I say the knowledge economy, before you had to have a skill. Well, those who can think beyond the ordinary in the knowledge economy rather than the knowledge-based economy. The knowledge-based economy where we were using other people's ideas, other people's monies, and other people's effort to make money. This gives you an opportunity to think into existence. Ideas is the new currency in this new incarnation we are right now. So if you have ideas, you could become an instant millionaire or billionaire.
Let's see, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. I almost forgot that we may need to take some calls. We were just chatting, but we have a few more minutes if anyone wants to jump in. We still have a few more comments here. The internet made the library obsolete. Google was supposed to revolutionize knowledge and make the world smarter, but it didn't. So why are we still looking for the holy grail of knowledge in some new software?
Well, what happens is, believe it or not, those things didn't change, you know. What happens was we did. What happens is, the fact is that if I put these products on the table and you don't utilize them, you can't blame Google. There were billionaires made and millionaires made from the tools of Google. You didn't do it because you were probably never taught how to maximize these tools. And this is what I'm saying. There is thousands of behemoths that, like fish, they don't know, fish doesn't know it is in water, you know. So we have all these digital natives in the Bahamas that has these inherent skills that no one has taken the time and directed them in their use. And so for the whole 20, from 1981 to now, or whatever you want to use, they've been born submerged in this water, but no one has taught them the power of their submersion. So we've had have them sitting at home, no jobs, no anything else, when they should be. If you said we only have 100,000 of them, we could very easily have them contaminate the world.
And I agree with you, because simple things like just how to search on Google, a lot of people don't know how to search properly. How I know, I will call the person's name, but I told him, yes, the search technology for me, right? It came up with some stuff, and I looked at their search, and I was just scratching my head. And I redid the search, and it was like, how did you find those things? There's even a technique to how you search on Google. Really, really simple things. So imagine all the things that we're missing and not utilizing. We have a call. Call, you're on here.
Good evening, Dr. Archer.
Hey. How you
good
doing?
Evening, Mr. C. Allen.
Yes,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, C. Allen, I would need some ideas. I think dollar is the new oil, right? Or was the new oil, right?
Was, yeah.
You know, I'm always a little behind on this technocratic transhumanistic paradigm, but I'll make a quick input. I would like for Dr. Archer to read Biodigital Convergence, right?
Yeah.
And so me and Seattle had mentioned it, and I had mentioned it also. The fact that, you know what popped up? mRNA vaccinations, right, Mr. Dr. Archer? You saw it, right?
Yes, 52 all right. Is
so,
a great
so we all lost and we made subterfuge out of our human genomic sequence and sovereignty and everything else, right? So what I'm saying is, I would really, from now on, I'll try to find ideas, but I personally don't believe in the biodigital convergence. It's going on. I saw something about human sleeves and, you know, the autonomous robots and uploading your consciousness to the robot, to the newer link, and living vicariously. You know, this type of BS is really, what is this, the holy grail, savior of humanity? I agree with the text. I love the text, though. Who texted that? But what I'm saying is, I'm trying to find a way out. But if I could, I try to find a way out, but I really like to make some money off it, Dr. Archer, because when I, lo and behold, to God, when I Googled biodigital convergence, the mRNA vaccination popped up as one of the incremental steps into the biodigital convergence. So they have the ability to send and receive signals. So this is what I'm afraid about. Notwithstanding the fact that the human genome sequence has been hijacked, that I was trying to tell them for a while now, but they want to connect us to the internet and all. So this is what I'm afraid of.
There's always a way to make money. And I think C. Allen tried to say that whilst the world is going so into this, you know, open information thing, we have an opportunity to go the opposite way, almost where we can control that and allow you to monetize that in a way. It's the same thing with...
Yeah, well, that's what I'm into.
With this vaccine
thing,
hold on, 52, but we now have this whole stream of kind of purists in the sense that, you know, they're having this conversation in the U.S. like, are you going to take vaccinated blood? Who wants it? Who doesn't want it? And so there are streams that are going to come off both sides of this thing.
Yeah, so maybe Dr. Archer, someone could help me commercial myself as being an unvaccinated sperm donor. Or just being an unvaccinated person.
That's probably
going
to be very
valuable. Maybe we can start a platform for that. Maybe females may be interested in that. Because
but 52, believe it or not, that becomes a value. This is part of data sovereignty. What happens is, you know, like how you have the GMO, If you have a GMO grass next door to you and the grass comes in, contaminates the grass, they own the grass. So when you have purity of genes that has not been manipulated, DNA that has not been altered, or anything of that effect, you will own it. You will
so
own
it. So with CIRL, making a platform of natural things.
All right,
Listen to me. I have an idea. Listen to me. A lot of foods were hijacked.
And we could sell everything online.
Yeah, but Dr. Archer, a lot of foods were hijacked through the RNA interference technology. I got a bit rusty, so I was down at a rabbit hole in genetics. Dr. Archer, if I was in the science, I am fascinated by genetics. It always keeps my mind ticking and always trying to learn. I just remember what RNA guide technology and, you know, it's just how complicated it is all the time. Just the fact that you're talking about RNA interference technology, which is really a form of genetic manipulation, right? Yes. Gene editing, CRISPR, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And two females play a very integral role in this. But I need to find a way to make some money from this, Cialin, even if I'm speaking the truth. Bless up.
Let me tell you something. In gene editing and everything, believe it or not, a lot of people don't know from the 1980s, we've always been in search of the God gene. And that's what it is. And so all the data, believe it or not, all of data in the world can fit in one person DNA. You know, we talk about hard drives, it could fit on one person DNA. Vastness of the data collection that we have capability.
Yeah, intelligent design. That's the most profound one ever. The human being, genes, we and ourselves are just like a walking blueprint for all the possibilities of the world. A couple more contacts. Someone disagrees with you, but I actually kind of agree with you on the TikTok thing, but they said TikTok in China is totally different from TikTok in the US, but I think that's more based on just rules. And they said Johnson, China and Taiwan are way ahead and they stay ahead because of the updates. Those people who created AI will always have the upper hand. Just watch The Matrix Reloaded. That's our reality in the future.
Yeah, I love those Matrix movies because see what happens is for those of us that was in artificial intelligence for the last 30 years, we get to see them and get to see people's perception of them. They should go back and read to see how they used to talk about planes. So at the time, they thought that everybody would have a helium balloon that they could walk across the sea with it. So the technology you see now may not necessarily be the technology that's designed. The way the technology is designed is by the collective intelligence of all of us that we can direct it. The problem is that we have now become absent landlord of the data that helps create the world we want to live in. But when you talk about that, the data collection, for people that understand what's happening with TikTok, they don't have a magic TikTok different from there. The argument is what TikTok is making. It's the same TikTok. Their argument is where we are not having the data available in China or to other people. So they're saying that their data is in isolation. And so there's an argument about bespoke software. Right. So there's a whole different argument. So trust me.
And what China does is they're doing what you're kind of telling us we need to do. They're kind of hoarding their data they're out there mining the world's data.
Yes.
All right? But then you can't get the data from TikTok China.
Right. Huh? And that's within a safe. They use the word? That's behind a Chinese wall.
Exactly.
What happens is, I'm simply saying is that, remember, data and artificial intelligence as it progresses is going to always need new data, consistently updated for new data. So our goal is to become the receptors for people to deposit all created data here. Use an example. You have the GDPR that we, even in the Bahamas, was recognized that if we keep data on anybody from the UK, this is the rules that must be followed. The same thing for data in California for data privacy. So essentially, we would create a rule that could be enforced by international agreement that they would have to have. So these people would have to come to the Bahamas if we say no data on any Bahamian citizen, whether digital or otherwise, to be kept anywhere. Well, we can move them within our jurisdiction. And so these huge data centers that we talk about has now been compressed. Artificial intelligence has taken 100 terabytes of data and made it into 2 terabytes, meaning that you need a smaller place to store it. And so essentially the world is changing. So the opportunities that I talked about 20 years ago is now. But as we begin to, the technology basis which we have this digital infrastructure on is dying. We are now moving to a new incarnation of what technology is, even infrastructure-wise. And so this whole thing about 4G and these other things we're using and things is done. This is not about consumerism. ICT is not for the Bahamas. I'm talking about technology, not ICT.
And so okay. last comment, and then we're pretty much done, C. Allen. We're running out of time. In the U.S., TikTok brainwashed us citizens dancing, twerking, Yeah, that's all over the internet. 10 seconds, C. Allen, wrap up your final.
I thank Behemoth. Look for me on social media. We can have more of these general conversations. I'm going to start doing some regular talk, but I would love to have some interactive. I'm getting the tools that we can continue this conversation, ask your questions, but most of all, in the upcoming election, get people to lead you that is digitally aware as opposed to digitally researched, not Google. And I'm simply saying this, we can and we will build a better Bahamas, and I'm going to take my position as I age out of this. So just ending, let me say this, I only know what I know because all the people in the room was in their 40s when I was 15 and 16, they're all dying or dead. I just have to. Okay, thank you so much.
You got there when you're young. Thank you, C. Allen, for being a part of the show. I think that was very interesting. You imparted a lot of information. And even if people didn't get it all, they can look it up and it'll get them really interested in what it is and start asking these questions. Thank you, audience, for joining us this Tuesday night on Guardian Radio 96.9, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. We'll see you all next week, Tuesday. Have a good night.